1422 Radio Great Southern. Well, one of our very favourite authors, and we do a lot of interviews with authors, as you well know, but one of them is a lady from Adelaide who we have been with since day one, since her very first novel came out several years ago called Paycheck. It is, of course, the lovely Fiona McCallum. And we have done, in fact, I think 6 chats with Fiona, with the 6 books she's written. Well, now number 7 has just hit the bookstalls. It's called Leap of Faith. And she's joined us on the line from Adelaide. Hello, Fiona. How are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm good. Lovely to be chatting with you again.
Yes, it's is becoming quite a regular part of our programming. You are, let me tell you. You're an institution these days.
Oh, well, it's wonderful that you're supporting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, and that support is right across the board now, of course, because you are doing very well. I mean, Paycheck, which was the very first novel, of course, did exceptionally well when it came off the press, and now you've had another 6, and you've sold more than 200,000 books across Australia. You were the highest-selling rural fiction author in 2014. It's all been worthwhile.
I am proof dreams can come true, Pat.
Absolutely. Well, when you think, when you were living in the eastern states and decided, look, you'd had enough of this and you really wanted to write and you had written and hadn't been published and then went back to Adelaide, and it all fell together, didn't it?
Well, it took quite a while, but yes. And, you know, you've just got to have the belief and I guess the obsession
yes.
To just chase it. And I think with writing, it's a true calling where... I mean, I honestly tried to give it up several times. And it chases you and it hunts you down. It's just, it's an obsession or like a drug or something.
Yeah.
It's a crazy thing.
And of course, the point is you have to be pretty dedicated to be able to sit there in front of a computer screen and actually sit there and write out all these chapters and then go through the business of the editing and all the rest of it. It's a pretty time-consuming job.
It is, and thankfully I love spending time on my own and I'm very, very disciplined, so I think that helps, and again, obsessed.
Indeed. So do you write when the mood takes you, or do you have a specific routine where you get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and at 9 o'clock you start writing?
Yes, I'm very routine focused, and I start... On a true writing day, and not every day is a true writing day, so before, you know, you get to a true writing day, you have to have a story in mind, and I'm a planner, so I've planned it out as much as I can, and I know my beginning, middle and end, and what I want the character to learn before I actually sit down to write. And so then on a writing day, I've got all that set, and in theory, I'm going to write. And so I'll start at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm a morning person. And so I'll get my cup of coffee and I'll be reading whatever current novel I'm reading. I will have read my notes from the day before of which bit I'm writing next. Like, for instance, with Leap of Faith, it could be Steve and Jessica go off to lunch. You know, it could be just that scene, and it could be just a few hundred words, or it could be several thousand. And on a good day, if the words are happening, then it just hits you and it just happens.
Mm.
But, you know, not every day is a writing day, and I think that you can't force the words.
No.
So you just have to accept that maybe on a non-writing day, then that's a day when the brain or the universe or whatever needs to percolate the story, and it'll end up better anyway, because you literally cannot force words.
Indeed so. Well, since we spoke to you 6 months ago with the last one, which was what, Meant to Be, I think, yes, the last in the Button Jar series, you've been off to England and America, of course.
I have, because I've had one of my previous novels published in the US and one of my previous novels published in the UK under different titles with different covers, and they came out at the same time. And so I thought, well, one ought to just go and see one's books on the shelf. So a bit of a self-indulgent trip, to be honest, Pat. But, yeah, it was great. So I went to New York and London, and then had a weekend in Dubai looking at gold, as one does.
Yes, indeed. But, of course, the beauty about that is, you'd never been, of course, to Europe, and you'd never been to America. It also, puts things into your brain, I suspect, for future books.
Yes, I'm not a journaler or a big note taker, and I just trust that, you know, it's all in there and it'll come out when it's meant to. So, yeah, you clock up, you know, journeys that I walked in the various cities so that if one day I have a character that goes there or lives there, then you know, I can draw on that. Because, as you know, with my books, I draw on a lot of my life experiences and a lot of truth.
Indeed. So now you were telling me you didn't take a cab while you were there. You, in fact, did public transport. That must have been an interesting experience.
I did. I had a ball. So I'm proud to say, other than my airport transfers, I did not catch one cab in either of the three cities. And I hopped on, got horribly lost. I have realised I have a poor sense of direction and cannot read a map. But so I spent a lot of time in New York trying to figure out whether I was meant to go uptown or downtown. So that was quite an adventure. But everyone was so friendly. It was amazing. As soon as I stood there with my map, someone would ask if I needed a hand.
Wow.
And that was New York. And I'd been told that New Yorkers weren't all that friendly. No one stopped in London to offer their advice. And I bumped into, in New York, I bumped into a fellow Australian, I didn't realise at the time, but she said, oh, can I help you? And I said, oh, I'm just trying to work out if I need to go uptown or downtown. And she said, oh, you're Australian. And I said, yes. And she said, so am I. She said, are you living here? I said, no, just visiting for a couple of weeks. And she said, are you on your own? And I said, yes. And she said, on the subway? On your own? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, you're brave. And I thought, oh, am I? Because I didn't feel unsafe once. I wasn't doing silly things like, you know, riding the subway at 2 a.m. or anything, Pat. But, yeah, I had a ball. It was really good fun.
But, of course, you're a pretty independent lady too, one has to say.
I am.
Yes.
Yeah. And so travelling to me is no different to any other day.
No.
It's just, well, you know, you just do it.
How'd you like the food, as a matter of interest?
Great. Not... I had some lovely meals with my publishers, actually. But, yeah, in New York, I think we're spoilt for quality, I guess is how I would say it.
Yeah.
Here, you know, we have great food and fresh, and the presentation at even just your average cafe here, whereas over in New York, just looks like it's thrown on a plate.
Yeah. yeah. And, of course, they're pretty big, the meals, too, I noticed.
Yeah. Mm. I love my food, though.
Oh, did you come back looking like a barrel?
no, I didn't, because thankfully I walked a million miles and double when I got lost all the time and went the wrong way. Had to backtrack.
Oh, lovely stuff. Well done. Well, it was certainly a worthwhile trip from that point of view,
yeah.
Because it's also instilled in you, I suspect, some storylines for down the track sometime.
Yeah, and also I've made some good contacts with
publishers
who I've only contacted by email before and got a better idea of books generally, because their whole book industries are very, very different to here in Australia. So that was a bit of an eye-opener, and not quite in a good way, but, you know, I need to know these things because I'm serious about, you know, the business of being an author.
Indeed.
And I want to be an international author. So, you know, I think I've made a wee bit of an inroad, but I think it's quite a journey to go.
Yes, well, you did tell me once upon a time you wanted to be like Agatha Christie and write 50. You've got 7 so far.
Well, we're chipping away, Pat. I'd love to be doing more, but there's only so much you can do as
well,
a human, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, and the brain has to work at a million miles an hour while you think out storylines and all the rest of it, you know. I mean, it doesn't just happen.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of other stuff with running a business. So I've worked out that I probably, with everything else I'm dealing with, you know, paperwork, all the stuff with running a serious business, I probably only get to write 10% of my time.
Yeah.
Which gets a little scary sometimes when you are contracted to produce a book and, you know, you're getting near the end of the year and you're thinking, oh, hang on, you know. So, yeah, you've got to manage your time pretty well and got to try and block things out and deal with certain things. And my problem is that I'm not very good at putting things off. So if I've got paperwork and BAS and, you know, office stuff to do, I can't knuckle down and write a book until I've dealt with them.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good trait, but also a bit of a negative as well.
What about personal appearances? Have you had to do many of those in recent times?
Not recently. Yeah, but I think there's a general understanding that touring isn't really a good value for money exercise.
No.
So, yeah, I haven't done any much recently, so that's... I could say that's quite good, because I'm a bit of a shy character in the public. And I'd rather...
Pull the other one.
I'm a bit of a fit reclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah, once you prize me out of the house, I'm pretty friendly and easy to get along with, but I don't like leaving.
No, you get that way, don't you?
Especially with winter coming.
Well, of course, with Leap of Faith, you've returned to one of your favourite topics, which, of course, is horses. Now, of course, you did a bit of horse riding in your time, didn't you?
I have. I think I was probably on a horse first when I was 3, and then I had horses and competed and did the whole pony club thing and the hunt club and the show jump club and the dressage club, and then I was an instructor for pony club, a qualified instructor, and did some eventing. And so I sold my last horse when I was 26, when I moved to Melbourne after my marriage ended. So I had horses, you know, pretty much my whole life. And it was a huge part of my life, because it's, you know, they're not just a motorbike you can park in the shed when you don't want them. There's a lot of interaction, and, you know, they make great pets. Sometimes I do miss having horses.
Yes.
But, you know, when you have horses, they're so prone to injury, and that just breaks my heart.
Yes. And, of course, you had an interesting experience, didn't you, with one that came down and injured your ankle.
Yeah, I have had lots of interesting experiences, but yeah, I had a horse actually that I've based Leap of Faith on. Leap of Faith, for your listeners, is a story about a horse that was rescued and brought home in a really poor condition, and that happened to me. I found a horse starving in a paddock one day and approached the owner, and she gave him to me, and I took him home, and he was actually... I actually commented to someone that he was the ugliest horse I'd ever seen. He was skinny, he was scrawny, he was miserable, and when I started to work with him, realised he was terrified, and he had been beaten, and then all the stories came out. You know, I've taken this horse, and then everyone starts to tell me the stories about him, and he'd had 7 owners in his 7 years, and then they all said, oh, no, he's dangerous, you know, don't touch him. But he turned out with a lot of love and, you know, a lot of gentle work, right from taking it right back to basics. He turned out to be an amazing little horse who got over a lot of fears, taught me a lot about myself. And I got him to the point of competing in dressage, which for a horse that had a... absolute fear of confined spaces because of the treatment that it had was an amazing thing. You know, if you knew the whole story, it's actually quite amazing. And I'm thinking one day I might write his whole story. But we were competing one day in dressage, and they'd put the arena in a place where it meant that there was a bear patch from an old pony club track or something, and it was raining on this particular day, and he came round the corner in the canter and slipped and fell, and I was still on him when he hit the ground, and I fractured my ankle, and it was quite painful, and yeah, it was not a nice experience. So when Jessica in the book falls with a horse on top of her, I know what that's like. So I was able to write that one without any further research, really.
Indeed. Now, we're talking about this lady called Jessica Harrington, who is a very promising horse rider, and she wants to represent her country and what have you. She has this fall at the Adelaide International Horse Trials, and breaks her ankle. And because her father had died, and he had been the driving force, bit of a control freak to a certain extent, but he'd been the driving force, and that's when the story begins, when she starts to really doubt her ability to go on and ends up selling her two horses, and just literally her whole world sort of disappears.
That's right, and because, you know, these days, and as I said, I've been an instructor myself, and in this era of, you know, insurance and liability, you can't, as an instructor, bully a kid or a person to do anything, because if something happens to them, you're liable.
Yeah.
And so for poor Jessica, she knows that she's lost her confidence, but what she's going to need is a bully like her father to get her back to where she needs to be. And she's not going to find that because, you know, people aren't like that anymore as instructors.
No.
And so, yeah, she makes this snap decision to get rid of her horses because, you know, they're prime horse flesh going to waste. They need the money for the farm. And also, she knows that every cross-country course is going to have a water jump, because they do. And she's now having nightmares about what's happened to her. So, you know, it all makes sense of, you know, why her life is unravelling. And also, you know, maybe now it's time to take a different path. So that's what she thinks.
Indeed so. And, of course, trying for a baby at the same time as well, thinking maybe that's going to be the solution to the problem.
Yeah, but, you know, you can't run away from the heart of the problem.
No, you have to face your fears, don't you?
Exactly. And so then her darling husband, who can see through her bravado of putting on a happy face that, you know, everything's fine, I'm fine, finds this horse at a clearing sale and brings it home in the hope that it's going to jolt his wife out of, you know, whatever she's going through. And, you know, poor Jessica just doesn't want to get sucked in again and doesn't want anything to do with this horse. And she is a horse snob as well, so she's only had the best horses, so she doesn't want a bar of this
runt,
brawny-looking thing, yeah.
Oh, dear. But, of course, as we see as the book goes on, and egged on by her husband and her best friend, Tiffany, she comes to grips with it all at one stage, and things do start to change.
They do. And, you know, this is the thing with animals, is they weave their way under your skin when you don't want them to. And, you know, she's such a... You know, she has that curiosity, so she needs to get to know this horse, and... We're not going to give the ending away.
No, bloody fear we are. No, we never give your endings away, except to say that you've left the door open for a sequel.
Well, that's what you've said.
Yes. I mean, you probably didn't think of that, but as soon as I'd finished reading it, I thought, hello, when's the next chapter coming?
No, I didn't intend that.
Oh, well. Maybe I've sowed the seeds of another book for you.
Well, that's it. And you just never know, because... The ideas come when they want to and in whatever form they want to, and, you know, it might be down the track and we'll see. But no, I certainly didn't intend it. I intended it to be a standalone.
Yeah. I mean, it does stand alone, but it does open the door should you decide to go down that track at some stage in the future.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, so you say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this horse could go on to be a great horse, and she could end up representing Australia, blah, 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 blah.
Anything could happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting. When I was reading it, you know, it's very realistic, and you could visualise each of these little segments, and you could visualise, you know, the conversations and things actually taking place. Very realistic to me.
I think that's me. I think I have a chatty voice in my writing.
You do,
yes.
Well, there's no contrivance in any of your novels, I've noticed. You know, there's no contrived situations. They're all real.
Yeah, well, to me it's a very real story, because a lot of it is based on the actual experience that I had with the horse I rescued, which was called Comanche. And, so I channeled that, I guess. But to me it's a very simple story.
Yes, it is. I mean, it is simple, but it's easy to follow and it's easy to read. And you can see, you can almost anticipate to a certain extent, you know, where she's going with all of this.
Well, it's funny. I was really pleased to hear someone emailed me and they said, oh, I was so relieved to find out that Tiffany and Steve were not having an affair.
I was not sure
I was going to get to the point where they were having an affair, and I'm so relieved.
That didn't happen.
No.
But it's
right to be a little mysterious.
Yes, but it's a fascinating genre that you're in, because I mean, rural Australia is such a different life from city Australia.
Well, I think so.
I mean, you've been brought up in the bush. You know what it's like. I mean, you've got a myriad of stories of things that happen on farms and in little country towns and what have you. I mean, there are so many stories there that would make novels anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas in the city, you tend to lose a little bit of focus because you're only interested in the people that you mix with, and you don't mix with a wider audience as you might do were you living in a country town, for example.
Yeah, and you see, I've had the best of both worlds, which I think is what's, you know, laid a fantastic foundation for me to be writing what I'm writing, because I spent the first 26 years of my life in a small community and on a farm and, you know, being raised a farmer. And then I went to uni in the middle of Melbourne and then got embroiled in corporate world and then lived in Sydney and was running my business mixing with all the corporates. And then left all of that to come back to Adelaide to focus on writing. But what really got to me, and I think has really prompted me to, you know, need to write these heartwarming journey of self-discovery stories, is how the contrast between the values of what I had grown up with and what I was seeing then in Melbourne and Sydney.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in the country, I'm not saying this is everyone, but there seemed to be a lot more stock on the weather and, you know, the basics.
Yeah.
And that was what you really worried about, and getting from A to B and that sort of thing, whereas in the city the values were more about impressions.
Yes.
To people and having, you know, more expensive this or that to provide a good impression, more so than whether it was to get you from A to B, as in a car, or whether it was necessary. It seems really interesting to me that the people just seem so different.
Well, they are. My experience of country Australia, and I've lived in a lot of country towns and what have you, is they're very unpretentious people, and, you know, there's what you see is what you get.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. And that's reflected, I think, very much in the sort of novels that you write, and you're writing about rural genre, and you keep things like politics out of it. I mean, it's, you know, nobody gives a bugger in the bush about politics, you know.
No.
Half the time.
I do sort of sprout on a bit about things that annoy me, and some of my books, you know, have come from things that have annoyed me that I've had to get off my chest. But
yeah.
I try not to, you know, get into politics, because I was raised that you don't discuss politics and you don't discuss
religion
in polite company or religion.
That's exactly right,
and
yeah.
You just don't do it. Everything's out there now. Everyone's talking about religion on Facebook, and I just cringe because I just think those views are private.
Absolutely. We've lost our values. But it's interesting because you've dedicated this book to all those who love and protect animals, especially those who rescue, rehabilitate and provide them with a second chance. And I think that's very important. And it happens a lot more in country areas than it does in the city, I have to tell you.
Yeah, I don't know. I just choked up then when you read that. Animals are really important to me. And I've got that from my dad. My dad died when I was 19, and I'll never forget how, you know, he brought home a kitten from... He was a farmer, but he also had a job working as an electrical linesman with... it's now SA Power Networks, but it was ETSA back then. Anyway, so at the depot they had this cat, and the cat turned up with kittens one day, and... everyone took a kitten, and there was this one kitten left, and they reckon it was the ugliest kitten and no one wanted it. Anyway, Dad took it because it was the ugliest and no one wanted it. And it was a funny colour. Anyway, brought it home, and it was our first house cat. We had plenty of, you know, farm cats.
Yeah.
took care of the mice and lived in the barns. But anyway, and this cat was a funny colour, but it grew up to be the most gorgeous Siamese cat. And then all the guys at work are like, oh, damn.
We should have taken it.
That's right. And then also, you know, I have lots of memories of my dad and his love for animals. He went, one day went with my uncle to, with the horse float and ute, to pick up a jinka, you know, horse-drawn vehicle. And he got to this property, it was miles away, and he saw this horse in the paddock that they were trying to sell or give away, had lost interest, this old elderly couple. And they didn't bring the jinka home, but they brought this overweight horse who had found it, and its feet was a disaster. And my dad spent months painstakingly trimming his feet back every so often to, you know, heal all the damage. And that little horse that, you know, had could barely walk ended up actually being reserve champion Galloway at the Port Lincoln
Show. Wow, that's dedication.
So I have a history.
You do. How's your cat, by the way?
My cat is a naughty cat.
Still sleeping on your bed and things?
He doesn't sleep on my bed. He sleeps in the laundry at night because I like sleep too much and cats are nocturnal. And so I'm not having a cat bouncing around on me at 4 a.m. And I'm a tough mother, but he runs the house otherwise. And he's very cute. He's a rescue from the Animal Welfare League, of which I'm a great supporter, as well as the RSPCA.
Great stuff.
But,
well,
yeah,
I think...
It's a dream of mine.
Yes, well, look, you know, it's not a bad trait to have, my dear, I tell you. Not a bad trait at all. And
well, if there was more kindness in the world, maybe we'd be better off.
Yes, you won't get any argument from me about that. Well, I think Leap of Faith will do very well. I think you'll still be up there in the top sellers. But, of course, the big question is, what comes next?
Well,
what have we got in store?
I've just finished editing, and it's gone off to be typeset, so I'll have to read proofs in a few weeks. For next April, so a whole year away, is a sequel to Wattle Creek.
Oh, really? Oh, did talk about Wattle Creek being a sequel, yes.
Yep, and it's called In Safe Hands.
Oh, wow.
And it carries on the stories of Jacqueline and Damien.
Uh-huh.
They have a hiccup, and the whole community has to get behind and sort things out. And that's all I'm giving away.
Well, that's all right. You're allowed to sow the seeds, if you like. It sounds like it's going to be fascinating, though. And, well, you're on your way to getting to 50, aren't you? Well, you're seven. You're only 43 away and 42 as of next April.
I feel tired just hearing that.
Yeah, well, sorry about that. But you did say you wanted to be like Agatha Christie and write 50.
I couldn't
say things like that if you don't mean them.
No, but if the ideas keep coming and people keep buying them and lovely people like you keep supporting me, keep on going.
It's not a problem. I mean, it's you know, there's a lot of rural books out there, but they're not all, a lot of them are contrived, and I have to say that yours isn't.
Well, thank you. That's a huge compliment. I think a lot of them have romance at their base.
Yeah, well, see, that's rural romance is another genre altogether as far as I'm concerned, and you don't fit that pattern at all.
Well, I keep being called rural romance.
Well, that's rubbish, because
me.
Yeah, I mean, there's the odd touch there, but I mean, it's not rural romance per se.
Because the primary story of mine is never a romance.
No, it's not. No.
Search for love or romantic love.
No. And you're not likely to ever go down that track, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, I wouldn't have thought. I must be just getting old and jaded.
Oh, I don't know about that. You're not too jaded if you can write books like Leap of Faith, I can tell you.
I think it's actually my favourite story so far.
Well, it's a lovely story, and it's so easy to read.
Don't say that lightly.
No, it's easy to read, and I loved it. And thank you so much indeed for your time. Really appreciate it. And all right, 12 months down the track, we'll be back on again talking about book number 8.
Thank you, Pat. It's been fun.
You're more than welcome. The lovely Fiona McCallum joining us there on the line from Adelaide. Leap of Faith is her latest novel. It is published by Harlequin, and you can buy it anywhere.